And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Stephen Wise, A Voice for Justice, was written by Mark Siegel.
I didn't really know Stephen Wise, but like you, perhaps I saw and heard him many times. Even if you saw him only once, you couldn't forget him. He stood tall and proud, and there was majesty in the chiseled features of his face. But what I remember most was his voice. The voice deep and tender, and at the same time fervent, was a voice that spoke for justice. It sang for all the lowly in the world, for all the persecuted and oppressed, the scorned, the otherwise forgotten of the earth.
For me, the supreme declaration of our Hebrew Bible was and remains Tzedek, Tzedek Tirdof, justice, justice shalt thou pursue.
Stephen Wise was 32 when he reached the great turning point in his life. In that year, it was 1906, he was the rabbi of a congregation in Portland, Oregon.
I just don't understand, Rabbi.
You don't understand what, Solomon?
Why you have to leave Oregon after 6 years. It doesn't make any sense.
I told you before, Solomon, I want to establish a synagogue.
Isn't Beth Israel a synagogue?
Yes, of course it is. A fine synagogue, the finest.
So what is it? You don't like Portland?
No, quite the other way. This has been my first home with my wife, Solomon. All my children were born here.
Then why don't you let them grow here?
You know, you're beginning to make me feel that I'm being stubborn.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
But still, we're going to New York.
Listen to me, Rabbi. You're still a young man. You've made a reputation for yourself. Better keep the reputation here than risk it in New York.
It's not my reputation that matters. That's what matters least of all.
And what matters most of all?
That I should be close to the beating heart of American Judaism, Solomon. New York is that heart. The whole future of American Jewry will be molded in New York.
One can serve anywhere, Rabbi.
Yes, Solomon, one can serve anywhere, but I want to be close to the Jewish masses, to voice their grief and their pain, to inspire them to hope and faith.
They will resist you in New York, Rabbi. Here we know and love you. You've taught us to listen to you with sympathy, even when we can't agree. But the synagogue is a democratic institution, and the pulpit must reflect the pews.
If there should be no other way, then I will create my own synagogue, Solomon. A synagogue where men will know from the very start that its pulpit must be free, where my views need not reflect the opinion of the pews, and therefore cannot embarrass my congregation.
That would be an unusual congregation, to say the least. How many will join it?
The number is unimportant.
If its strength is not in numbers, where will its importance lie?
Importance? In being free in every sense. Free in the range of issues discussed from its pulpit, and free in its effort to reach those who have remained outside the synagogue. If people cannot be reached with a service on Saturday, then I shall conduct at a time when I can gather them.
Would you go that far?
If necessary.
Do you realize what you're calling down on yourself? You're willing to take that chance?
I must, Solomon.
Then God bless you, Rabbi. You go with our love and blessing.
Thank you, Solomon. Something tells me that I'll need it.
Mm-hmm.
You call this a synagogue. It's a theater.
What's a theater? Let's enjoy the show.
You could use a better press agent. The house is empty.
Give the man a chance, will you? It's still a free country.
Look, I know it's a free country. You don't have to tell me that. Tell me something I want to know. Like, what's a free synagogue?
My friends, many of you who have come here today are asking yourselves the question, what is a free synagogue? In this first sermon, I propose to answer
that question. Listen to that voice. He must have swallowed an organ.
First, the voice. Listen to what he's saying.
This shall be a Jewish society, for I am a Jew, a Jewish teacher. We mean to be vitally, intensely, unequivocally Jewish. Jews who would not be Jews will find no place in the free synagogue, for we, its founders, wish to be not less Jewish, but more Jewish in the highest and noblest sense.
I heard him in those years, I and many others. The congregation grew from 50 to 4,000. It moved like a restless bird from roost to roost until it settled down in Carnegie Hall. We came and listened and were fascinated. He stood like a prophet in the marketplace, fighting for justice, setting his face like flint against the forces of corruption. His name became a rallying cry in the fight for clean government. His voice became known as a weapon for social reform. He sided with labor and its right to organize. And, inevitably, as his influence and power grew, the selfish and corrupt he fought came to hate Stephen Wise and to say so.
How can they say such things about you, Stephen?
These attacks are a small price to pay, Louise.
But the names they call you, sensation monger.
Louise, in a world of shame, the truth uttered without fear is bound to sound sensational.
Stephen, it's terribly late. Can't you let that draft go till morning?
It has to be ready in the morning, Louise.
But you've been working since 5:30 this morning.
Yes, I am a little tired.
I'll get you some coffee, Stephen.
Louise, you think of everything.
I didn't know you could be guilty of a cliché.
There's only one topic on which Dr. Wise is at a loss for words. His wife.
He thundered against child labor and pioneered for the improvement of working conditions. He waged the battle for equal suffrage for all citizens, regardless of sex or color. He demanded relief for the needy and dramatized the need for decent housing. On every battlefront of democracy, wherever the fighting was thickest, you could find Stephen Wise. When the choice was expediency or justice, you could count on it. He chose justice.
Stephen, you haven't said a word since we started for the synagogue. There. You've proven it.
Louise, my sermon this morning will cost the free synagogue $1 million.
Oh, no.
I mean it literally. We've raised almost $1 million we need to put up a synagogue building.
Oh, you've worked hard enough at it.
When I finish speaking this morning, most of the gifts will be canceled.
You've wanted the free synagogue to have its own building for so long. Is your sermon that explosive?
It is, Louise. It's on the present strike threatening the nation. Most of our larger contributors won't take kindly to my support of the workers' right to organize.
You mean you're really ready to sacrifice that building?
What else can I do?
Nothing. I wouldn't have you do anything else. Stephen, have I said it lately? It makes me proud to be Mrs. Stephen Wise.
The sermon was delivered, and as Stephen Wise had predicted, the $1 million building was lost. But his personal code of speaking the truth as he saw it remained unbroken. An unyielding faith in a free, creative, effective democracy, and in a unified world governed by just law, fulfilling itself in blessed peace. These were the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day which guided Stephen Wise. And in his conviction, he was sought out for friendship by those men in public life who shared his high ideals.
Good morning, Governor Wilson. I came as soon as I got your message. My congratulations on your election.
Thank you, Dr. Wise. Won't you sit down?
After you, Governor. You know, you'll have to learn to be seated first at the White House.
Won't you let me be a gentleman just a little longer?
Of course.
Dr. Wise, I'm trying before I take office to familiarize myself, as far as possible, with those issues of our domestic and foreign policy which I will face as president. That's why I've asked you to come down to Trenton.
I don't quite see
how you can help. Well, that's easy. I want to know in the fullest detail about this question of Zionism.
Governor Wilson, I couldn't be more honored, but I have a great curiosity. With so many issues facing you, why do you choose at this time to be concerned with Zionism?
Well, I have two reasons. The first is that Zionism is not just a Jewish problem. It's a human problem. And therefore, as I see it, an American problem.
And the second?
The second is that I once taught history. The treatment of the Jewish people has been a barometer of international morality for hundreds of years. As president, I feel it will be important for me to be familiar with the movements and issues affecting the Jewish people.
The president is free now, Dr. Wise. You may go in.
Thank you, Colonel Huff.
Well, Dr. Wise, it's good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I have some gratifying news for you, sir. The British government is planning to issue a declaration. A document promising to aid in restoring Palestine to the Jewish people after the war.
Mr. President, I have prayed for this event for many years.
Yes, I know. And in the interest of justice, so have I. This declaration will be submitted to me before it's made public. Its issuance is contingent on my approval.
Yes, I understand, Mr. President.
Dr. Wise, I can think of no two men better suited to review this document from the American point of view than you and Justice Brandeis. Justice Brandeis has already consented to serve in this way. Can I count also on your assistance?
It will be a privilege to serve, Mr. President. Colonel House, I return this piece of paper to you with great emotion. It opens the way to the realization of a dream cherished by my people for 2,000 years.
Rabbi Wise, I join with the president in rejoicing over this development. Have you or Justice Brandeis suggested any changes in the declaration?
Only one, sir. The letter reads that the British government will undertake to use its best endeavors to facilitate the establishment of a national home for Jews. We feel it should read, the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people.
Is that of great importance, Dr. Wise?
Of paramount importance, Colonel House. If this declaration is to be meaningful, it must be given not to individuals, but to an entire people, justly recognized by the nations of the world as an historic entity.
Yes, I see the justice of that, Dr. Wise.
And what is more, Colonel House, it is not on an individual basis that Jews seek to restore Zion. In democratic countries, Jews will continue to identify themselves with the land in which they reside. It is not as individuals, but as a people, bound by the memories, the traditions, the hopes and sufferings and sorrows of 4,000 years, that we shall realize the ancient dream of rebuilding Zion.
In the years that followed, as Stephen Wise uprooted injustice and weeded out wrongdoing, he planted for the future. He was the founder and organizer of more institutions in American Jewish life than any other man. He created the American Jewish Congress and the World Jewish Congress as a platform from which to defend the rights of his own people. He created the Jewish Institute of Religion to train a Jewish ministry that would carry on in his footsteps. But it was not only as a leader and teacher in Israel that he grew. It was as a champion of the oppressed of all the world. The cry could come from any corner, from Chinese coolies, Indian peasants, southern sharecroppers, from a Mooney or a Billings, a Sacco or Vanzetti. And the cry would find an echo in the soul of Stephen Wise. Yet all of this was a preparation. A preparation for a struggle in which he would pit his faith and radiant energy against the most deadly organized injustice of our time. The year was 1928.
Stephen, you haven't been yourself lately. What's troubling you?
Louise. For the first time in my life, I am afraid.
Afraid? You, Stephen?
I see terrible things happening, Louise.
But you're used to that.
Now, this is different. There is a creeping sickness spreading over Germany. They call it National Socialism.
National Socialism?
Nazism, for short. An insane movement with a madman at its head. His name is Hitler.
But surely that kind of thing won't make headway in Germany? Not in the land of Goethe and Mendelssohn?
These reports show it is making substantial headway in Germany.
I can't believe the German people will accept the ravings of a psychotic. Nazism will collapse of its own weight.
It will not collapse unless it's fought, Louise. Fought vigorously.
Then fight it, Stephen. If anyone can, you can.
May God give me the strength, Louise. May God and our people give me the strength.
My friends, last week I announced from this pulpit that I would preach today on the world threat of Hitlerism. I have since received a note of warning that I would not live to deliver that address. That I would be shot while speaking. I have only one answer to the writer of this letter, if he is in the audience. If I am to be shot, I venture to suggest that it be done now before I begin. I prefer not to be interrupted while preaching.
Less than a year before Hitler came to power, the American Jewish Congress sent an emissary to Germany. He returned in October of 1932.
Dr. Wise, I have completed my mission and...
Yes, please don't stand on formalities. What do they say?
I visited 30 of the leaders of German Jewry.
And what do they advise? How can we help them?
Dr. Wise, they advise nothing. 29 a certain Hitler will never come to power.
Gentlemen, I've called this meeting to consider what steps we can take to avert the threatened hurt to the Jews of Germany.
Dr. Wise, don't you think you're being alarmist?
I would rather be alarmist than unprepared.
Well, in any case, Dr. Wise, this is a problem for our government, not for us.
Are we not citizens in a democracy? Shall we give up our birthright of citizenship because we are Jewish? I say we have a right, no, a duty, to register our opposition to this mounting threat of violence.
Dr. Wise, there's an old maxim which I think can stand us in good stead. You see an emergency in Germany. Some of us disagree. Let's not cross the bridge until we come to it.
Gentlemen, that is the classic answer of inaction to foresight. What shall we do if when we reach the bridge, it has been burned?
The bridge was partly burned on January 29, 1933, when Adolf Hitler was summoned to be Chancellor of the German Reich. The reign of terror began immediately. The targets were not only Jews, but labor leaders and church leaders. By March the 12th, the Nazi swastika was proclaimed the official flag of the so-called New Germany. Stephen Wise hurriedly summoned leaders of the American Jewish Congress to an emergency meeting.
Gentlemen, the question is, what is left to do? We've tried negotiation. It doesn't work with these people.
You cannot negotiate with beasts. You have to expose them. I see only one course left, to focus the spotlight of attention on these Nazi crimes.
But Dr. Wise, do we have that right? Would not the net effect of such an effort be only to deteriorate the relationship between our country and Germany?
Can that relationship improve if we allow the attacks on democratic and civil rights in Germany to grow? Can we, as Americans, come to terms with evil without losing our own freedom?
What do you propose, Rabbi Wise?
I propose that we let the American people know what is happening in Germany. Once they know, they will serve notice that America will not abide this return to the Dark Ages.
It won't be easy, Rabbi Wise.
This is no time to consider the difficulties. Let us give ourselves 15 days to organize a meeting whose protests shall be heard around the world. Another message from the German Foreign Office.
Oh?
The same thing.
If we call off the mass meeting, they promise to moderate some of the anti-Jewish measures.
Hmm. And if we go ahead?
There may be reprisals.
We can't gamble with the lives of Germany's Jews.
If it were only the welfare of the Jews at stake, I would agree, but it is more than that, far more. I can feel it. It is the future of the entire democratic world.
It is a terrible responsibility, Rabbi. An awful responsibility.
Oh, my friend, how well I know it. But as an American, I can see no other way. We must go ahead with the protest. And make up the strongest protest that we can.
This was the beginning, the first outcry of the civilized world against the barbarism of Hitler. For the next 12 years, Stephen Wise gave his life, heart, and soul to a relentless attack on Hitlerism. The war came, and he rallied Americans of all faiths on the home front for the struggle. The war ended, and he plunged into the work of rescue and rehabilitation of Europe's Jews, into the task of prying open the gates of Palestine. He fought, as he had always fought, storm-tossed, but constantly on course in his pursuit of justice. To the end of his 75 years, Stephen Wise fulfilled his concept of his destiny, uprooting evil. But as his years came to a close, though he carried a heavy burden of illness, pain, and personal grief, he was privileged at least to see some of the fruits of his planting. His dream of Zion rebuilt was being translated into reality of the Free State of Israel. The Free Synagogue was at last assured of a permanent home.
Well, Dr. Wise, this is a great day. You must be proud and happy.
I am, Rabbi. But I would be happier if my wife had lived to see this day, this new free synagogue building. In a way, it will be a monument to her courage and understanding.
And to your foresight, Dr. White.
Hasn't all been foresight? I've had my share of mistakes, too.
Not serious ones, Dr. White.
Most of them I like to think the mistakes of youth. The free synagogue is now 42 years old. But I founded it on a platform that was too rebellious of tradition.
Dr. Wise, it has made a deep impression.
To build the new, I was too ready to discard the old. I'm talking of the nature of the religious service. If I could live my life over again, I would for the most part do as I have done. But to shift the Sabbath day of service or to abandon the majesty of the Hebrew liturgy, there are some things which have become too precious to the tradition of the synagogue to be lightly, or indeed on any account, abolished.
This was Stephen Wise, a strong-willed man who, when he made mistakes, had the moral courage to retrace his steps. This was Stephen Wise, friend of presidents and of the lowly, rabbi, teacher, Zionist, crusader for democracy, uprooter and planter in American Jewish life. The day we said farewell to Stephen Wise, the sun was shining. I stood on 57th Street with the other tens of thousands and watched the funeral procession roll slowly by. The sun was shining, but the eyes of men throughout the world were clouded. And on that day, although I never really knew him, I wept. For all the people of the world had lost a friend, and Israel was diminished by a noble voice, a voice that spoke for justice.
Because I am a Jew, I have spoken the truth as I have seen it. Two Jews and of them. To Christians and of them. To Americans and of them. To synagogue and church and of them. To the powerful and privileged and of them. To the lowly and disinherited and for them. ¶¶
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Israel Goldstein, rabbi of Congregation B'nai Jeshurun, New York City, and president of the American Jewish Congress. Rabbi Dr. Goldstein.
To have worked at the side of Dr. Stephen Wise, as was my privilege for many years, was an experience in beholding greatness. He was leonine in visage and in temperament, valiant both in friendship and in controversy, gentle with children, humble and solicitous toward the weak, but unafraid and daring with the mighty. His denunciation of wrongs was a peal of thunder. His moral intuitions were a flash of lightning. His mercy was a balm. His laughter was an exhilaration. His devotion to his family was a benediction. The masses loved him and followed him. The barons feared him. A man's personal qualities are remembered by those who knew him personally. His place in history, however, is remembered by the causes he fostered and the institutions he built. The Free Synagogue is a living monument to Dr. Wise's pioneering of the free pulpit and the free pew. The Zionist Organization of America is a living monument to his pioneering in bringing the vision of Theodor Herzl to the Jews of America. The State of Israel is a living monument to his pioneering in winning the ears and the hearts of American statesmen for this vision. Decent housing, decent working conditions, and the rights of labor are a living monument to his blazing social passion. The American Jewish Congress is a living monument to his pioneering pattern of an American Jewry democratically organized to promote Jewish unity, Jewish dignity, Jewish self-affirmation, and to make a contribution to the American way of life by espousing and defending its fundamental freedoms. The World Jewish Congress is a living monument to its concept of Jewish peoplehood bound by ties of mutual responsibility. Because Stephen Wise lived, the Jewish people, America, and the free world are more alive. Because he died, all of us are under an obligation to see to it, each in accordance with his strength, that the flame he kindled shall remain an eternal light.
Thank you, Dr. Goldstein. Our eternal light drama today, Stephen Wise, A Voice of Justice, was written by Mark Siegel. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Norman Rose as Stephen Wise, Ann Seymour as Louise, Paul McGrath as President Wilson, and Joseph DeSantis as the narrator. Lead production was under the direction of Edward King. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.